Welcome to FBI Open Up. Today we'll be talking about who was J. Edgar Hoover and how did he affect the FBI. We'll also be talking about why the FBI was founded. And we also will be talking about mobsters that got caught by the FBI, such as Don Dillinger and Al Capone. We hope you enjoy your
For the first segment, we're going to be talking about why exactly the FBI was created. A huge reason, probably the biggest reason why the FBI was created in the first place was because of something called the Red Scare. Now, the Red Scare was basically just the rise of communist Russia, and people in America were fearing of a revolution from Americans for communism in America. That's why all the communist flags are red. Red is for the blood now.
Okay, now I'm going to talk about in April 1919, authorities discovered a plot for mailing 36 bombs to prominent members of the U.S. political and economic establishment. So basically, they sent over these bombs, these mail bombs that went over to these like government houses. And basically, they 8 of them exploded. And no one got injured, but someone's house exploded, so that happened. And eventually, this was called the Palmer Raids. And basically, Palmer, governor, he ended up deporting 249 Russian immigrants on the Soviet Ark. And he also created the FBI because of it, and which they helped jail more than 5,000 citizens, and they also would search homes and
Alright, so for our second segment, we will be talking about one of the leaders of the FBI, which is J. Edgar Hoover. So in August 1919, the 24-year-old Hoover became head of the Bureau of Investigations as the new general of Intelligence Division, also known as the Radical Division. And one of his first assignments was the Red Scare, which we talked about. And he also had to help arrest multiple people for the Red Scare. And eventually, in 1921, Hoover rose in the Bureau of Investigation to deputy head. And in 1924, the Attorney General made him the acting director. And this was when the Bureau of Investigation eventually became the FBI, which eventually had 650 employees, including 441 special agents. Hoover was kind of a sexist because he fired all female agents and banned the future of hiring them. But, yeah.
All right, in the early 1930s, criminal gangs and criminal activity were at an all-time high. They both carried out large numbers of bank robberies in the Midwest, and they used their superior firepower and fast getaways to elude the law. All right, in our next segment, we're going to be talking about all the gangsters and mobsters in the Great Depression era. There are a lot, so this will probably be our longest segment.
In this segment, I will be talking about Machine Gun Kelly, another mobster and bootlegger who was in the 1930s caught by the FBI. So, Machine Gun Kelly was a bootlegger, small-time bank robber, and kidnapper who ranged through Tennessee, Mississippi, Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico in the 1920s and 1930s. In his early life, before he did kidnapping, he did a lot of small-time bootlegging, which was he basically would sell illegal alcohol. And he eventually would rob banks with other people. Some bank robberies he did were in St. Paul, Minnesota, with his girlfriend. He basically robbed a bank with his girlfriend. And then after that, he ended up going to do kidnapping, which he made several attempts with his wife doing kidnappings, but his most famous one was probably he abducted this guy named Herschel from Oklahoma City, and he was like a really rich guy who owned oil, like an oil company. And he basically wanted a ransom of $200,000. And basically they set up an elaborate system for the handling of their captive and the delivery of the ransom. But they didn't count on Urshel's sharp mind and the authorities keeping track of the ransom monies and serial numbers. The ransom was delivered on July 30 in Kansas City, and Urshel was released the next day. He was unharmed, and although blindfolded some of the time, he was able to provide a number of clues to the authorities. And this led to, such as the FBI to find out where he was. And he was, arrested, and he was sent to Alcatraz Prison in California, home to a lot of criminals such as Al Capone. And in the 1950s, Kelly moved to Leavenworth, Kansas, where he died of heart failure of in July 18th, 1954. So that's the end of the segment. In this segment, I will be talking about Alcatraz Prison. So Alcatraz Prison was like a high security place in California. It was off like an island, and basically, a lot of the people caught by the FBI would be sent here. And basically, each cell, well, there was different blocks. So there was like the B, C block, and D block. But basically, each cell was 5 feet by 9 feet. And each day in D block, inmates are confined to their cells 24 hours per day, with the exception of one visit per week to the recreation yard, and these visits were alone. And there were about 336 cells in B and C block. There were originally 348, but 12 were removed when stairways were installed. Eventually, there were about inmates were allowed visitors eventually, but they were only granted one visit per month, and each visitation had to be approved directly by the warden, and no physical contact was allowed, and rules dictated that inmates were not allowed to discuss current events or any matters concerning prison life. Inmates talked with visitors via intercom, and a correctional officer monitored the conversations during each of the majority of the time. So eventually, like Al Capone was sent here because of tax evasion, and he was sent there. So was Machine Gun Kelly. And, a lot of people disliked the silence in there, which, it was discontinued in the late 1930s, but in the early years, inmates were not allowed to talk to one another except during meals and recreation periods. Some inmates commonly emptied out the water from the toilets and created a primitive communication system through the sewage piping. This rule was considered harsh, and inmates were disciplined for even minor violations of this code. Inmates also state that the island is very cold. Most agree that cells in their higher tiers with window views are more popular, since they tend to be warmer than the ground level cells. No executions were performed during at Alcatraz. That was up to the state. And 8 people actually were murdered by inmates on Alcatraz, and 5 men committed suicide, and 15 died from natural illnesses. The island also boasted its own morgue, but no autopsies were performed there. All deceased inmates were brought back to the mainland, released to the San Francisco County Coroner. And at the time, the highest number of prisoners was about 302, and the lowest number was 222. The average number of inmates during the 29 years of service was around 260. There were approximately 1,545 total men imprisoned there, and the NPS indicated that while 1,576 number was issued, over 30 convicts were returned to Alcatraz with different numbers issued. On average, the time of residence was about 8 years, was how long people would stay. Men were never directly sentenced to Alcatraz and usually had to earn their way. There were only two men ever paroled directly from Alcatraz to the free world. And there were a lot of people who tried to escape, such as 36 prisoners were involved in various attempts. Two inmates actually successfully made it off the island but were quickly captured. Seven inmates were shot and killed trying to escape. Two drowned, and five inmates had been unaccounted for, presumed drowned. The famous escape that was made by Frank Boris and the England brothers, all three were successful in swimming off Alcatraz, but all three are believed to be drowned, but it was never really known if they were. And Alcatraz was eventually closed because of the rising costs and deteriorating facilities. Operation Alcatraz was the most expensive prison of any state or federal institution. It was determined the other institutions could serve the same purpose for less cost. So yeah, that was about it for Alcatraz. Just a short segment here, but I just wanted to talk about the FBI and eventually they started having fingerprints, which led to further uses of like DNA and stuff and like trials. But in the early 1930s, the FBI took about 100,000 fingerprints in different cities, and this helped them basically with clues and stuff to finding out who did stuff, such as like if like guns and stuff, they found fingerprints on them. But yeah, this eventually led to stuff like DNA, which is used today, and which actually could have helped solve many cases earlier in the early years, but never was used because it was too advanced then. But yeah.
Alright, for this segment, we're going to be talking about one of the most infamous mobsters of the 30s, John Dillinger. John Dillinger created his own self-titled gang called the Dillinger Gang. They went through 12 different robberies throughout two years. They had many members in the Dillinger Gang, such as Babyface Nelson being the most famous. John Dillinger died on July 22nd, 1934. He aged 31 years. He died at Biograph Theater from a gunshot wound from the FBI. They caught up to him and they saw he was watching a he was watching a play in the theater. I can't remember. So fun fact about John Dillinger was he escaped prison two separate times from two separate prisons. And he has two different films made about him. The first one being Dillinger and the second one being called Public Enemies. All right, for our last segment, we're going to be talking about our second mobster, Al Capone. Al Capone is probably just as, if not more, infamous than John Dillinger. In the public eye, he was seen as the modern-day Robin Hood, often donating to various different arts, such as theater, and music, and jazz. How he became famous was from bootlegging, which was he would take alcohol made in Canada and he would take it across the Detroit River, and he would sell it to various people during the Prohibition era. Al Capone, through bootlegging, was affiliated with the Purple Gang, and they weren't exactly allies, but they were friends, and they weren't rival gangs. And with this, Al Capone hired the Purple Gang to do the St. Valentine's Day shooting, which he hired the Purple Gang to shoot 12 rival gang members in broad daylight. And it's probably one of the most famous shootings ever. How he got caught was the FBI couldn't link him to racketeering or any of his murders. So they went through and they saw he was avoiding taxes. He wasn't paying them. And so they caught him that way. That's probably all for Al Capone in our last segment.